Okay, we are going to start with the Q&A session from the floor. Alberto Gandolfi, then Manuel Palomo. Alberto, please.
Thank you. It's Alberto Gandolfi from Goldman Sachs. Three questions, and thank you for taking the time in physically in person. It's great. So the first one, could you elaborate a little bit more regarding the logic to de-emphasize a little bit investments in renewables and emphasize a little bit more in networks? What's the logic? Is it capital intensity? Is it maybe a slight concern on returns? Is it being more selective on IRRs? If you can maybe talk about that, would be great. The second question, talking about maybe capital preservation, which is how I would define some of the measures you announced correctly in this credit environment, why not trying to go even further on preserving balance sheet and capital so that don't you think maybe some of the small developers, some of the smaller players may not be able to fund projects? So isn't the moment to be quite aggressive on balance sheet right now, reduction, and then be counter-cyclical and basically try to invest when everybody else is not able to gain more market share? I'm thinking, for instance, why not going 2 years scrip dividends, just as an example. And the last question, when it comes to the profitability of your offshore projects, we saw a statement by Avangrid in particular pointing out CapEx cost inflation, funding cost inflation, and you were asking for a renegotiation, effectively, if I'm not mistaken, of the project. What are the chances of these renegotiations, and are you willing to walk away from some offshore projects if the returns are just not there? Thank you.
Thank you very much for your question, always very intelligent one. So I don't know if I repeat enough time what is the main drive of this presentation, of this business plan, which is to protect financial solidity. To protect financial solidity. To protect financial solidity. So I think our focus, our vision is clear. So we are in the middle of a storm. We have not really had this storm for decades. And we are in the middle of a storm. So when you're in the middle of a storm, our approach is that we have to be as conservative as possible and to be as less dreamers as possible and to be as much, let's say, with a strong means for in whatever situation to protect what we feel is crucial, which is balance sheet solidity. So, and we are already a unique opportunity. It's true that we can already now, I was mentioned somebody else before when we were already just having a coffee. And I've already, nobody's perfect. My hobby is to ride horses. And I think when you're with a horse that you don't know very well, and now in my birthday, my son has already given to me a new horse. So I was another day with it, but I don't know it. And I think you don't know how the horse is going to behave. So you have to be very prudent with it. So now we have a horse, which is this crisis, which we don't know how long it's going to stay, how it's going to change the things. It's an unknown situation in many fields. So I think the list of things we are suffering in this moment, inflation, rate of interest, a war in the borders of Europe, so a problem with Armando was mentioned of the supply chains, so many things are there. But we are already glad that we can choose. We have already a regulated activities, which I think is going to be absolutely needed for the present and for the future if we would like to diminish the dependency, electrifying more economy. So the grid is crucial for electrifying the economy. And we are glad because we are in countries where this grid is absolutely needed. So you see the United States, or you see Britain, you know Brazil, you know Spain, in all countries. If we would like to have electric vehicles, we need the grid behind. It's not a problem of charges, it's a problem of grid. If we would like to transform already certain industrial processes, We need a grid. I think the hydrogen. The hydrogen is renewable, but the renewables, the hydrogen has to be produced inside what is needed. And for that, you need already a grid for transporting the electricity to the site, because it's much more efficient than transporting the hydrogen through a pipe. So that's why you have the choice. The choice to reinforce our investment in grid, or to continue or booming in renewables. I think, I know for Armando, should be easier for him to say to his people, there are 24,000 megawatts ready to build. Said, no, wait a minute. So we are ready to build that one. Said, no, wait. Let's keep already only 3,000 ready for a build in this period. Why? Because we have to protect our financial solidity. We can already make the choice of networks, because we have predictable, stable regulation. We can already guarantee what Pepe was mentioning, cash flows. And we have to say, well, another one, let's continue preparing our pipeline. Let's do something, because we would like to continue to make that one, in which technologies, those technologies which are providing better return. So we can make much more than other things, but let those ones, but also those ones which are already offer more predictable return, more cash flow. Offshore is offering two things. A part of better return is already CFDs or similar, which are already guaranteeing returns. It's not already just in a protection. So in that case, your second question, why not to be faster and to put more risk to our balance sheet? Because not. Simply not. Because I think for us, dividend is a must. So in 22 years, when I joined the company 20 years ago, the model was Enron. Enron was growth, no dividend. I said, sorry, we dividend and growth, yes, but dividend first. So, and I think for us, dividend is a must. And second thing is, that is not a question of competition. There are plenty of needs in the next 20 years. I think I gave to you some numbers, how much investment will we require in the next 20 years for electrifying the economy, decarbonizing the economy, become self-sufficient in central geographical areas. We are talking about trillions of dollars, trillions. So I think it's not a question to be in a hurry. I think we have to have already the pipeline ready to build, and we will do it in due time. Inshallah, then during these 3 years, the situation changed. Great. We have a solid balance sheet, good pipeline, we go ahead. Let's move faster. But now, with the vision we have already now, take care. We have to control the horse. We cannot jump in this moment with the horse, because we risk to fall down. And I've been too many times fall down in my life with my horse. So. Offshore. So, in our grid situation, first, what is in the plan, all are already in this morning fully agree. I think those ones we are renegotiating is for 27, 28. So, and why we are renegotiating? Because the world is changing. When we made the offer, it was not the war, it was not the problems of the rate of interest, we was not already a situation of supply chains, and I think it's normal, because when you are already making something, you are making with good faith, and I think now is the time to negotiate that one. And I think what happened, I'm sure I think we are going to reach an agreement, because even renegotiating is much cheaper for them than the alternative. So which I think it has a logic, the logic I think is going to impose. And that's it. So I think we are convinced that that is going to reach a good time, but I think the same thing we are with everybody. I think if the things are changing, we have to, the things are not black and white. Sometimes you have to negotiate. But in summary, our plan is solidity, 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 solidity. Ready to build, if needed, more, and now concentrating in those things what we can guarantee, or to have more security about the cash flow we can generate for keeping and maintaining our solidity. Clear?
Next, Manuel Palomo, and then El Chin, I think.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking the time. Thank you very much for taking my questions that, to some extent, will be aligned with previous Alberto's questions, at least the first one I will stick to. I see that the large portion of your renewables growth has been already secured, and you have already contracted a significant portion of the volumes. However, also cost of capital has increased massively in the last few, let's say, quarters. How do you expect to defend the value creation for those projects that have been already awarded? Is there any specific plan in terms of, I don't know, renegotiations or trying to reduce somehow the cost? Is there any plan to try to preserve those returns? And the second one is a question about Spain. I understand that this is the case, but just to confirm, yesterday one of your peers mentioned that it had included the around 400 million impact on taxes in their financial targets. So my question is whether these targets, today's announced targets, are somehow including any impact from taxes, whether this will be for 1 or 2 years, and if possible, if you could quantify. Thank you very much.
I think in the first one, as you mentioned, is almost just reply with my comment to the previous question. So I think most of the renewables we are building are already with PPAs or with a secure returns, because I'm making, and it's only a few of them which is already in market. But this old one which in market is based in for our own use. So which I think is making the substitution of certain energy, for instance, in the case of Spain, then today we are already producing with gas. So I think it's making the substitution, which I think we are already guaranteeing a certain return, because we expect that the cost of that one will lower than other alternative. So I think how you guarantee, mostly those ones are either because we have PPAs, either because we have CFDs, either because we are already securing through our market, what we can already substitute today is already production with another more expensive sources. In terms of including the taxes, I think, Pepe, you can already mention that one, but I think a few days ago when we presented our 9 months result in the projection for the year, we said already it's included in our projection for 2022, and as I mentioned as well, is already in our projection in 2023 as well.
So, yeah, we have both for 22 and for 23 we have included. So for the guidance that we have been giving for this year, it's included. And for 23 also we are including a similar amount. The amount that we are expecting is lower, a little bit lower than the one of Endesa, but using the same parameters.
Nevertheless, I would like, as it's already an interview which is published today in the Financial Times, I think we feel that is absolutely unfair, because I think that the European Commission is talking about windfall profits, and I think we have not windfall profit, and I think it's that's why they are changing to revenues. So I think it's that's equivalent to increase the taxation of corporate tax from 20 basic points or something like. So and I think, of course, I think because we feel that is not already going in line with this, the projection of the European Commission, which I think is correct. I think there is somebody else in this crisis is earning a lot, an extra profits, which I think if we will generate an extra profit in this one, we will be ready to contribute. It's not a question of criticizing. All we have to contribute on that one in the middle of a crisis. That's why I'm saying we are already doing our best in this moment to contribute on this one with our investment to generate more wealth and so on and so on. So I think we are beating record 47 billion. So, and even if it's not enough, okay, but it's a lot of money. So, but I think we have not win for profits. We have not in Spain win for profits. We are not already in gas production, we have not gas contract, we have not already all those things. I think our business is renewables, and the renewable has been sold, as Armando was mentioned, at a price already agreed, and we continue keeping our price already in the same level. So where the windfall profit is generated? I think the fact in Spain this year we are affected negatively, because we have already agreed prices 2 years, 2 years ago, and I think we are keeping these prices, even in the moment then unfortunately, in our case, because of the hydro condition is very bad, in the worst in 65 years, because the wind situation is not very good in the country, we are forced either to buy electricity from the market at very high prices, or produce with our combined cycle, buying the gas at very high prices as well. And that is generating, that was our accounts of the 9 months, 40% less profit in Spain than the previous year, which was not a very extraordinary year either, so because we were already in the, with the COVID, etc. So that's why I think we feel that is not already fair, and I think if that goes, I think we will try, and I said today, we'll go already to the court, as many other times in the past, when we consider there are something which is affecting negatively to the interests of our shareholders. I insist, we are open to contribute to this situation of crisis if we will already have this real windfall profit, which is not the case.
Next, Elkin Mamadouf, then José Javier Ruiz, and afterwards I will share with you the rest of them. Gonzalo as well.
Hi there, Elkin Mamadouf. I have a couple of questions, please. The first one on your carbon targets. I mean, if I read it correctly, you haven't changed it much, even though Avangrid has just brought forward its decarbonization goals and expanded the scope of its decarbonization target. Is it because you're seeing more emphasis on energy security and therefore fossil fuels, or are there other factors like Iberdrola's targets being already one of the leading in the industry? So this is the first question. The second question is about the renewables. What's the biggest pain point that you're seeing for the industry? I mean, you mentioned a lot today, there's supply chain issues, regulatory uncertainty, there's inflation, etc. What is the one key problem for the sector that you're seeing, or maybe rank these in terms of their importance in terms of a headwind? So yeah, those will be. Thank you.
I think on the first one, what we are seeing is that our target in the group is in the scope 1 and 2 to be by 2030, and that is across the group. That means in each country what we have to take decision on this respect in many fields. So either because of course, we are not investing in a new fossil fuel power plant, either because we rotate the asset of those one, either because whatever thing we find out, mechanism for compensated, but I think that the group target for all 2030, all the group is going to be already for our production carbon neutral. The second one is related to renewables. Well, I think is we are seeing that I mentioned as well before. So I think this energy crisis is already is an opportunity for decarbonizing and for becoming self-sufficient. So I think the fact that some countries like United States is already utilizing this thing for already making certain kind of incentives for accelerating the construction of renewable, accelerating the construction of hydrogen, etc. And in Europe, I think Repower for Europe is a document in this sense as well. I hope that today certain of the bottlenecks we have been suffering for the last few years related to permits, European Commission is going to announce, or they are going to present something to try to accelerate that one. Saying that, so we are not already in some countries having the attractive environment which is needed for this acceleration of construction. So I think the fact that the problem of this crisis is gas, and in some countries is taking measures against renewables, are not facilitating, incentivating that to move faster in this direction. I hope that all those things already will be already a bad dream, and they will come to normality as soon as possible, because the solution is more renewables. The solution is not more fossil fuels. So I had already in my times in the sector, have already suffered 3 energy crises. If we are not doing the necessary now, I think we will come another 4 energy crises, and the problem should be the same. So now is Russia, before was already the Middle East, afterwards should be, I don't know, okay?
Okay, now is José Javier Ruiz. I'm going to put more or less order in the questions. Javier Garrido, Rob. And then this Rob. And then this way, Gonzalo as well. José Javier Ruiz.
Thank you for taking my questions. There are two. The first one, regarding your first slide, electrification, has this energy crisis changed in any way the way you were thinking about electrification? I'm talking about timing and the penetration targets that you were seeing in 2040-50. The second question is about your plan beyond 2026. So you seem to be projecting a big ramp up in terms of investments, up to 15-17 billion euros capex per year. And my question is, what is going to change that timing? Is there any possibility of ramping up earlier? What you need to change to move into those levels of capex? Thank you.
Well, I think on the electrification, I come back again to the same point. I think this crisis has demonstrated that if instead of being so slow in building renewables, we had already been much more agile. If instead of being so slow in electrifying certain industrial and consumer uses, we had already been much more agile in installing heat pumps in the homes and electrifying certain industrial things, I think the problem will be already less than it was, that it is now. So I think the electrification, in my opinion, and I think that is where European authorities is already providing with the repower of Europe, is how to accelerate that one, to avoid, and that again we suffer the same thing. And the solution for becoming self-sufficient in many countries is use the natural resources we have. I think in Europe we have not oil, we have almost no gas, but we have sun, we have wind, we have in certain areas good resources for offshore wind, and some countries has already a nuclear steel power plant, which probably they can be extended. In some countries, those ones they decide politically. In other countries, they decide to make nuclear with their own resources, but we have no more things. And I think that's why that is going to help to accelerate that one. The second thing is the plan 26 to 2030. So I think we are talking 65 to 70. If I divide by 5, I think it's 12 to 14 billion. So I think we are already now in the range. We take already in the organic one, we are at the same range. 36 in 3 years is 12. So I think it's a bit more, but it's not much. Taking into consideration that we have quite a few offshore what is going to be built during this period, I think it's offshore is multiplying by 3 times the average of capex per megawatt to another one. The second thing is the point you mentioned about electrification. So we are sure the electrification is going to increase. Hydrogen. So in hydrogen, another day I was making some numbers. If Europe would like to reach the 10 million tons target by 2030, Europe needs to make an extra investment that represents something like 250 to 300,000 new megawatts in Europe. It's 30,000 per annum. That means 300 billion extra investment, apart of another one. So all those things have to be already done in the second part of this decade. If not, so I think all the targets fixed are absolutely useless. But it's going to happen. I think the world is moving in this direction. I think already in meetings with many colleagues of the industry, European industry, they are very focused in trying to modify their processes, to make their process more electrical, to use already hydrogen, introduce hydrogen in more processes. And I think that's why. I think that our investment in the next period is not anything extraordinary we have not already made. We are making already now. I think this year probably are going to make 11 billion or something like that. So I think it's not ready to make, instead of 11 to make 12 or 13, is not a big difference for us. Especially when he has already 24,000 megawatts ready to build. So I think I need already to to stop a bit, because we have already more than opportunity of making that one a part of the electrification in distribution.
Now, Gonzalo Sánchez Bordona at the back of the room, and then Javier Garrido, sorry.
Hi, Gonzalo Sánchez Bordona from UBS. I have three questions on my side, please. Can you provide us an update on the PNM acquisition situation? What's going on? What is the timing you're expecting there? And also, since this is a significant part of your CapEx plan, if the deal doesn't go through, what would be the alternative? I mean, are you considering doing other investments during this time frame over the next 3 years, or it will be just eliminating that? And also related with that, I think you said that the contribution to the net income target for 2025 is negligible, but if you could confirm that or provide some guidance there, that'd be great. Then on the reduction of cost of financing, could you elaborate a little bit on the assumptions you are doing there? If I understood correctly, and please confirm if that's the case or not, you are assuming that there is a reduction in interest rates in Brazil, and then the rest of currencies remain stable, and therefore there's flattish evolution for the rest of currencies. But I seem to see a small reduction in 2025 on the cost, so if you could elaborate a little bit what is behind those numbers. And then the third question is related with the partnerships approach. Obviously, you've been quite successful in the past few deals you've done, given the difference in cost of capital on your side and I'm assuming on the investor side, and creating significant value on those transactions. So I was wondering, how are you seeing this situation as it is evolving? So you obviously are engaged in several conversations, I would assume, on these kind of deals. So if you could provide some details on how those conversations are going, are you seeing a significant increase in their requirements in terms of yield, and whether this could threaten to some extent the numbers you've just presented? Thank you very much.
So the first one related to PNM, we are already quite comfortable that the deal is going to happen. But I think it's the point of that one, as you see, if by chance it's not happening, you see in the next what is the consequences for us, which is it's not affecting much to our contribution. Is very little contribution in this period. Is reducing the debt, so I think they give room, as you mentioned, for another investment, and we have plenty of opportunities for more investment in WIS, so which I think, but we are quite convinced that the deal is going to happen, so I think that one. In cost of financing, Pepe?
Yeah, well, Gonzalo, what we have been using is basically the market estimates. You have it in page 91. Basically, these market estimates, what are looking is at the end of the year. As you know, we typically use long-term funding, fixed funding, and this is more or less, what drives the cost of debt, independently. To the fact that obviously we have part of the debt already fixed, okay? But as you are saying, for example, we are expecting that the Brazilian real will move down its CDI from levels of around 13.75 to around 8% in 24 and close to that in 25. And these are basically the numbers that are behind our estimates. As you see, we are expecting that sooner or later inflation will start to come down, and that somehow interest rates, especially in 24 and 25, will start to move down slightly. No?
So I think in the point of partnership, I think you can already add whatever you like, Pepe, but I think what I can tell you is I'm receiving more calls from private equity and from funds which are ready to participate with ourselves in whatever our project. So I think our problem is to make the choice what is the right one for that one. I think the appetite is there, Pepe mentioned, but I think I'm receiving personally visits of people from different regions and from different countries and from different geographies and ready to to be our partners. I don't know if because our priests are very good or because we are very sympathetic or because of both things. But I think my point now is to say no to who I have to say no, because there are many, many who would like to be the partner. But Pepe, perhaps you can add whatever you
yes,
like.
Yes, you are absolutely right, Chairman. I think that we are an attractive company for equity funds. No, I mean, we are a solid company. We have a track record. We are a well-established, we are a worldwide leader. And I think that, you know, I think that we provide, as the chairman was saying, a lot of, I would say, credibility for investors. In addition to that, I mean, it is true that some of the equity funds are, or the private equity have debt, but there are some others that are equity, purely equity, and still they want to deploy a lot of capital because they have the mandate to do that. So, as the chairman was saying, at this moment, you know, we have a good or a lot of interest in, I could say, in all of the assets that we are analyzing at this moment to, and in which we are looking for partners.
Javier Garrido, then Rob, Fernando, Anto, and this.
Thank you. Good morning. Javier Garrido, JP Morgan. I have two questions on returns. The first question would be on the U.S. networks. If I understood correctly, the CEO said that in the rate cases, you had expected broadly stable return on equities. This is coming in a context where interest rates have increased significantly in the U.S. So how do you look at the value creation in the U.S. network business? Should we expect to see decline in spread in your returns versus the cost of capital, or are you ready to beat those return on equity expectations given the incremental size and the incremental investments? And then the second question would be on transmission. We have seen a few of your transmission projects that have been facing obstacles like the Western Link or NESEC. How do you look at the returns from transmission projects? Are you expecting higher returns than in the traditional distribution network business? Are you adjusting it to take into consideration higher risk profile? Thank you.
Armando.
Okay, so I think the U.S., as you can see in the presentation, is one of the main where we are going to invest higher. And this is because I think the regulation is very stable. We know very well the rules, and the ROE we have seen all those many years is very linked to the macroeconomic indexes or interest rates or everything that we have been facing now. We are seeing that the ROE we are going to have compared with the cost that we have are going to be maintaining the spread in the U.S., maybe higher. There is one thing that is very unique, that most of the regulators now are very aware of the renewable penetration that is needed in the U.S. The U.S. needs a lot of infrastructure reinforcement for penetration of decarbonization. This is a unique opportunity. Many regulators, especially in New York, are putting in place special capital investment programs in order to invest in specific decarbonization projects that are very, very, is like apart from the ROE from the traditional assets. So that gives us a lot of flexibility. And also for us, it's a huge opportunity because we can transfer a lot of knowledge that we have in other regions about all this digitalization. So it's for a company like us, the U.S. is a very unique and very targeted market, and I expect to have the same spread or maybe higher. In terms of transmission for us is something like it's different from distribution. Distribution will become one of the key development decarbonization capital boost for the future. If you think about how much high voltage lines you have to build for connecting all these offshore wind farms that are developed, for instance, here in the UK, we have this offshore wind in the north. We are very excited about what we are seeing in Australia. Australia is changing completely the mix of carbon to renewables, and you have to redefine the transmission all over the footprint of the country. What we have, and we have shown, is a unique track record of being the most competitive company when we are putting transmission assets. We are very confident that this transmission and this asset will have similar or maybe higher return than renewables, and might very similar what we are seeing in distribution. But we are very, we expect a lot of growth of that. And HVDC technology, for instance, as I said, we have a strength technology there, at least in NECDC and this project. So we expect the transmission will be a huge vector of growth for renewables and decarbonization in the future.
Rob Poulain next, and then this gentleman, I don't know you, sorry, in the fourth line after Rob.
Thank you very much. Rob Poulain.
Sorry, Antonella and Fernando Lafuente. Oh. We will have time for everybody. Okay, please go ahead.
Okay, okay, great. Rob Poulain from Morgan Stanley. Thank you. Two extra questions, if I may. The first one to Pepe, regarding your funding of the CapEx program. May we ask how much earnings dilution you associate with the asset rotation and how much of that is in the 2025 target as opposed to later in the decade, just to cross the T's and dot the I's? And the second one, returning to the comments on hydrogen, could you comment or guide on how the economics look on hydrogen projects, whether that's in IRR or other terms? Are you still awaiting support schemes? Could we see a European version of the IRA to help, or are we finally going to see this next-gen EU funds put to good use? And lastly, within hydrogen, because I think it's a fascinating topic, where do you stand on the virtual pipeline of generating hydrogen elsewhere in the world to import into Europe, and can Iberdrola play a role in that? Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yeah, well, we have absolutely included, you know, the loss of the contribution in the asset rotation in the 25 results. We have included the loss contribution, and we have not included the possible capital gains. So, but saying that, you know, it is true that we are seeing, you know, an increase in our minorities, you know, of around, I would say, 200 million, but that has to do also with the results of the increasing results of New Energy and, you know, all these sorts of things. I cannot give you an exact number. I can give it to you later, but I would say that, but be sure that, you know, we have included the loss contribution of the minorities in our results.
So, on the point of hydrogen, so the first thing is hydrogen is electricity in a form of gas. So, people talk about hydrogen. Hydrogen is renewable electricity, transformed in gas. And the huge investment is in renewables. So, the little investment is to transform the electricity into gas, into hydrogen. So the investment required for making that one is not huge compared with the power we need to be behind. So the first thing. So for us, what is? It's an opportunity to have already a new market for our electricity. So I mentioned before, in the case of Europe, the 10 million tons of hydrogen which Europe has already fixed as target for 2030 represent a total investment of 300 billion of new investment in power, in renewables. Probably 60, 50, 60 more in the power for making this hydrogen. But I think the majority is that one. So what is our approach? Our approach is we are energy producer. And I think we would like to be in all the value chains of this energy. And we are facilitating that one, and that's why you are making that one. But not only hydrogen. Hydrogen as an alternative solution for electrification, we are doing, for instance, in Barcelona. Barcelona trucks, buses, are powered with our hydrogen, which is already made with our own renewables electricity. In the south of Madrid, in Puerto Llano, we have already built the largest hydrogen power plant in Europe, but is beside a huge solar power plant, which is that one which are providing the electricity. So probably two-thirds, you were already staying visiting that one. Two-thirds of the investment, more than two-thirds investment, is connected with the power needed for making the hydrogen. And what you're making with this hydrogen? Transforming in ammonia. So we are already finding a new customer. Then before, this customer was consuming this hydrogen produced with natural gas. Now we have a customer which is consuming our electricity in form of hydrogen for making their own ammonia. We have another project, a different project in other places. We have announced recently a project for making methanol. So this methanol is made with, as well, with natural gas, making hydrogen with natural gas and with natural making methanol. So we find out a new customer which is going to consume our electricity in form of hydrogen for transforming this hydrogen into methanol. So I think that is our approach. I think we are a power company, and we are already looking at all the routes to market that Armando was mentioned, and that is a new route to market for selling our electricity using those things which are strongly needed. The fact is that we have also the skill for making that one, that we have already built the first large-scale power plant in the south of Madrid. We have already this already making for transport. We have already another country, like the United States. It's a good opportunity for improving the profitability of our existing power plant. So we have already in Texas an agreement with Sempra for making already green hydrogen to be transformed in ammonia using the electricity that our wind power plant are already now producing in Texas. Probably that will give us some extra megawatt per extra dollars per megawatt hour for making that one instead of selling to another thing. So that's why I think hydrogen is electricity in the form of gas. I think put in mind. I think those ones we're talking about hydrogen is electricity in the form of gas. And the best way for making that one is inside. Don't make dreaming to transport hydrogen from long distance. That is 3-4 times more expensive than to produce the hydrogen inside what is required. And to make a little or large hub where you can already make the distributed hydrogen around. So I think that is the common approach of most of European industries. So generate electricity which is cheaper, transport electricity through the point was mentioned about Armando transmission, through very efficient transmission lines into the place where this electricity can be converted in hydrogen and this hydrogen convert in whatever, ammonia, chemical products, methanol, whatever thing.
Okay. Hi, it's Mark Freshney from Credit Suisse. I have two questions for you, Mr. Galland. Firstly, on the levelized cost of electricity. I mean, you know, for the first time ever, the levelized cost of electricity from wind and solar is up because of debt and equipment costs. And my understanding is that's a psychological challenge for many regulators and governments after being used to seeing costs falling for so long, to get in the mindset that this renewable energy is now more expensive. So my first question is, how are you finding that debate? And secondly, I accept, you know, there's the 24 gigawatts, of which only 6 gig will be built near term, but permitting is the number one challenge. I think you've even admitted it. Clearly, that's got to change in Europe, and regulators will say, look, you know, energy is expensive, or governments will say, energy is expensive, but you know what? I'm not going to damage property rights. I'm not going to hurt my voters. How do you see that debate evolving? And do you think the politicians you engage with are going to get their head around permitting?
So I think my feeling is precisely the opposite. So I think it's true that because of this crisis, the raw material prices are increasing, but it's increasing not only for renewables, it's increasing for fossil fuels as well. A gas turbine is more expensive. A power plant of coal is more expensive. The capex is much higher. So I think is, what is the alternative? The alternative is to build more combined cycle of gas, which I think we have increases because the steel, because of the old components are higher, or to make coal power plant. And I give to you the example of Australia. Australia has plenty of coal, plenty of gas. And what FDA approved recently? A bill of the carbonizing, because they have the chance in this moment they have to decide what to do. Their coal power plant are at the end of the life. They have to decide if to invest in new coal power plant or to invest in renewables. And the parliament and the government has already approved to invest in renewables and to keep already the coal in the on the ground, which I think they can keep for future generations if needed, because it's cheaper. So I think today, still, the capex is cheaper, renewable, another one. And the price you can obtain is lower. But I think that is the big problem we are facing in this crisis. We have already been for too long looking only one part of the equation, which is cost, 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 cost. And nobody was looking enough in self-sufficiency, self-sufficiency, self-sufficient. And now we have not chips for our systems. We have not ready steel. We have not ready copper. We have not ready ammonia. We have not ready even bread. So grain. Because we have been looking cheap, cheap, cheap. So I think, in my opinion, the world is moving now in the opposite direction. It's looking to be, in all sectors, enough capacities in case for being less dependent on third parties. And I think that is a drive which is changing, because what we are suffering in those countries, we have not really built enough industry for already not to see 100% self-sufficient, but enough capacities. We suffer with the COVID. What happened with the COVID? We have no mask. In Europe, we have no mask. We are not already, ¿cómo se llama? Respiradores, los. ¿De? Breathers, no, breathers, no. Ventilators. We are not ventilators. Europe is not ventilators. Europe has not masks. And we are, why? Because we are looking price, 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 cost, cost, cost. So we have to look another thing a bit. So now we have, I insist on that one, we have the opportunity, this crisis, to become more self-sufficient, self-sufficient, self-sufficient in all fields, not only in energy, but as well in many components which are already we need in our industry. And I think most of my colleagues in Europe, in the different associations where they belong, are precisely looking in this direction. How we can already produce chips in Europe, semiconductors in Europe. How we can already have certain capabilities, not 100% capabilities, in solar panels. How we cannot lose our capabilities in wind turbines, etc., 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 etc. So that's why I think my point is precisely in the opposite direction. It's true that today's, I think the learning curve probably in certain technologies is going to continue decreasing. Another one will reach a certain level. I think you cannot already reduce the price forever. So it reaches a moment that technically it's not possible as much as has been up to now. But that is not the driver. Today's, still, renewables are by far cheaper than any alternative of fossil fuels. By far. CapEx, no OPEX, and no variable cost. By far.
Clear? Okay. Antonella.
Hello, good morning. Antonella from Citi. One question on your return on capital employed. You basically reallocated your CapEx, even within the network. It seems to me that you reduced a little bit the exposure to Spain, you increased in the UK, you increased in the US. Can you elaborate on that? It's because you think that the framework, the regulation is different, and therefore you will have better response from the other country rather than the Spanish one, or is because of specific projects? A similar question on the renewable. I've noticed that you have cut a lot solar, and I think you cut Spain more than other countries, well, US as well. Why those countries? You decided to invest less in this country rather than in others. So if you can elaborate on where you think there will be a better return in the future.
Pepe, you make the first one, you reply the second one, and I will add whatever afterwards.
Well, I I basically think that, we think that the risk return profile in countries like the US or the UK are better than today what we have in Spain. And I think that one of the key strengths of this group is the diversification. Unfortunately, we are suffering in Spain, you know, decisions which we don't agree and, you know, which we challenge. You know, the last, well, I mean, you can read the newspapers, no? So I think that we feel a much more secure. We think that the regulatory certainty is higher in these countries. And, you know, and also, you know, the potential growth, the optionality, the opportunities, as the chairman was saying, you know, PNM positions ourselves in areas with high growth for the long term, where there is lots of opportunity in a very large market where we can, where we think that the value creation for the long term is larger than in Spain, no?
In terms of renewable, as I was mentioned during my presentation, we are seeing the whole portfolio as a package. As I explained, we invest when we can get more more revenues from these assets based on the road to market we choose. So this is how we are delivering that. So, for instance, in Spain, we have a huge amount of customer footprint, and we are replacing some of the technologies that we already have for renewables, so this is creating us more value. And this is why we are choosing that. And also in the U.S., because, you know, as the chairman said, now there could be a more favorable schemes for the renewable. But again, it's not a matter of countries. It is maybe the resource, but it's a matter of how we can produce the higher revenues for the assets in all the pipeline that we have.
So, Antonella, I would like to add the both are mentioning. Certain, the investment we are looking, what are the countries which are already, as Pepe was mentioned, which are providing more stability, predictability, rule of law, and better return. So I think we are already, we are not the owner of the money is yours. So I think we have to look already what is the best places to allocate this money. In those countries which are offering better return, more stability, more predictability, more better rule of law, I think we are already looking with better eyes those ones. The second thing is in terms of the best of partnership. What to the best, as always? So first thing, those things which are not fitting with our strategic proposal. They have business where they have in the company, or we are in countries, or we are in regions, what we are to spread. And I said, what we can do in a place, what we have already X megawatt, which is peanuts, and is a part of the area, what we are set in terms of that. Or what is, how we can already have better returns making some partnership with us in order then therefore already provide certain capital in a base which is cheaper for us than other manner. So I think those are the alternatives what you're making. And the best man, of course, we are in some cases, we are saying that we are the best in thing, not expecting to have a special, some extra capital gain. If we gain, capital gain will be delighted. So Joaquim, David will be delighted to obtain a good capital gain, but this is not in the plan, that one. But I think if we have that one, fine. But I think most is to reorder our assets. I think we are talking about 3% of our assets to be rotated, which is peanuts. So, which I think is, I think you can see that in a company like us, like ours, we have already in countries, in region, in matters which is not really fitting very much with our target. But I think in the first point, which is important, is we are looking very much, when we look already where to allocate our investment, a part of the things we are saying we prefer more in the case of offshore, because they are giving already providing predictability, stability, we have already fixed terms, etc., etc. We are already all those ones. But we look very much what is the countries which provide stability, predictability, rule of law. And I think that is one of the things we are systematically doing. So I think in this moment, it's a very attractive United States with the IRA. Of course, we are going to look with us to make hydrogen in the United States, because I think hydrogen is providing $3 per kilo. So, and if the another country is giving $4 per kilo, probably will another country as well, so which is it's obvious. Okay?
Fernando Lafuente. this in the second line, sorry.
Thank you so much for the presentation and actually for bringing us here to London again after such a long period. Three questions for me, please. One, it's a follow-up for on the comments the chairman just mentioned on asset disposals. I was wondering if what I understand from the plan is that you are basically considering disposals of minority stakes in certain assets, and peanuts, let me say peanuts, smaller assets in countries where there is no fit. Would you be could you consider, if there is a, let's say, a huge price, to sell a big asset, just a full asset, or the strategy is only minorities and no matter what?
Well, perhaps you can already say, because most of them are already now in the market. Those ones we are going to divest are well known, so you are not having secret. I think you can already mention that some of them are already now. We are receiving offers for that one because in the market, another one are in talks on those ones. So it's not already a mystery what we are going to make, but you can already add whatever you like.
No, as the chairman was saying, in this moment, basically we are looking for partners. And even in the asset rotation, it's meaning that we are selling a stake, a percentage. Sometimes would be a majority stake in the case of MAPFRE, although we continue to be the industrial partner. The philosophy here is that Iberdrola continues to manage these assets. And there are, you know, some assets that due to they don't fit on the strategy that we might sell 100%. There are a couple of them which we are right now negotiating, which is 100% of the asset, but they are not very large. Or they don't fit in a specific territory where we think that there is no critical mass. And in terms, you know, if there is, you know, as the chairman was saying, if there is a big asset, I mean, the money is not ours, is yours. So if the offer is very good or whatever, obviously we will analyze everything, no, as always.
Thank you. And two further questions. The first one, it's on the on your pipeline, pumping pipeline in Spain. You mentioned you have, if I'm not wrong, 4.5 gigawatts of pumping potential pipeline facilities in Spain. What do you need to go ahead with these assets? Because to me, there are pumping facilities are quite relevant in the context that we go. You've always defended that these are the real batteries, and I basically agree with you. So what do we need for you to have these facilities in operation, and best case or assumptions, when do you think this could happen? And the last question, maybe it's for the chairman on this debate on the potential changes on the way the price is fixed in Europe in this marginal system. I would like to have your views both at European level and for a country like Spain, you know, that probably we have a higher weight of renewables than any other in Europe. Thank you so much.
For pumping stories, that I agree with you that it's very important, especially in some countries that we have very important assets in hydro. And I think there is something that we have to foster as fast as possible. But the question is very simple. Is regulatory a regulatory system that could be stable and predictable? You know, this investment is very huge in capital investment, and it's very efficient, but we cannot be making this investment based on only markets, as the other capitals we are doing. So the thing we need is to have a proper regulation that the government clearly have an idea that the pumped storage is a huge, huge advantage for the decarbonization of the country. This is what we need, and this is what we are asking, because in some countries there is a huge potential for that. And this, I think, as I told you in the presentation, is the best answer for that, for storage.
So saying that, I think is what we are doing in pumping storage. We just finished one large pumping storage facility in Portugal. So which I think what we need already to have already the framework to make that happen. And I think in Portugal, Tâmega is a pumping storage facility. It's a 1,200 megawatt pumping facility, which is three dams, which is playing with the water. So we have recently duplicated the capacity of Cortes La Muela, which has been inaugurated by the King a few years ago. And we have already a couple of two or three projects in this moment as well making in the country. But what is needed? So to make the framework for already make that possible. I think Spain and all Europe needs already storage capacity. Now is in the mind of the regulators in the different European, at the European level, how to encourage to make already more capacities on that one. And pumping certainly is the most efficient one, especially in countries like Spain, and we have a lot of dams, but we have already very different height in between one and another one. In another country which are flat, is not so easy. So related to the market changes. So the first thing is the market design in Europe has been standing, are not my words, are the words of the European Association of Regulators, which are representing all the European countries' regulators. So it's not my words only, it's the words of that one, and the words of the European Commission. So the market we have at present has already performed very well. So I think Europe, we have already, during the time that was already implemented 30 years ago, we have already had already the European electricity supply, no problem. The investment has been already done in the world system. So in the fact, when they are already, the demand is very high, the prices and the offer is not enough, the prices goes up, and vice versa. Now we are very nervous because the marginality of that one, but we have the marginality during the COVID. And during the COVID, the prices were depressed, very depressed, because the demand was very low, and we were forced on that one. So it worked. Saying that, I think it's true that in a future market, a future system with more renewables, so need certain adjustment, because you need to guarantee 24 hours, for instance, pumping. So you're going to make pumping just thinking only this marginality, because probably that is not enough for making already that, in the fact in certain countries which are already just making a special treatment for batteries or for storage. They are making a special option. So things to be adapted. But we have to be very prudent and very detailed analysis on that one. So I think that European Commission is going to analyze that one with time enough, with the presence of everybody, with everybody involved, how to improve the things. There are areas, for instance, capacity mechanism is going to be needed. Systems like storage. So how to make already a battery which is going to work only for 1 hour? How to justify that one? How to work already, how to improve the PPAs, cross-border PPAs, which is absolutely needed. So today it's very difficult to make cross-border PPAs because every country is doing whatever they like. So how you can make already a PPA in Germany with energy produced in Spain if they choose the rules in Spain or they choose the rules in Germany? So all those things have to be analyzed. So, but my approach and the approach of the European authorities is that they are going to be very prudent in the analysis, with participating all the agents on that one to make something with at least stay for another 30 years and provide the security and energy security and such vision that Europe requires. So I think those questions. Okay?
Okay, more questions? This way, sorry, there. One, two, three,
four. Hi, good morning. It's Rocío Lozano from Scotiabank. I just wanted to ask about the problems that are facing some of the wind turbine producers, and how do you, if you see that as an impact in your growth business in the wind market?
Armando?
Okay, what we are seeing now is that there is some kind of movements, but on the other side, you have to think about which is our relationship with these big players. This is the difference we have. We have been for years working with one of these players face-to-face, and also, you know, the pipeline that we have in front. So the conversation we are having and the conditions that we have with all those manufacturers is different. On the other side, I want to point out what I said. Most of this plant is already secure. Everything is secure in terms of the engines, of the offshore. We have the solar panels already secure, and we have most of the offshore wind turbines already secure, and we have any of them that is still missed, but it's based on the FID conditions. You know, sometimes you have to design the machine, but we have frameworks, global frameworks, for many years with one of these main local global players that we are still in place.
Okay, is there no more? We are going to move to the web. We ask Firmino afterwards. We have several questions from the web. Most of them has been already answered, and we have questions from Javier Suárez, Mediobanca, Jorge Guimaraes, JB Capital Markets, Ahmed Farman from Jefferies, and Michael Carton from Santander Credit. The first one is, do you plan to close all your CCGTs by 2030?
Well, it depends. If they are not needed, yes, but I've not seen the need is going to be needed. Probably they will be needed, but for very, very short period of time, which I think been for some time, and I think we have to guarantee the supply. And I think we will keep already those power plants, we can already guarantee the supply. So I think it's not in the plans to close those ones, but I think certainly the operation will be minimal of those ones. If the renewables is already making, is already done in the way which the European Commission and European authorities is already foreseen.
Next question is, can you share with us your views on how the European Union should ensure access to competitive electricity while ensuring security of supply?
Well, I think that is what they are already trying to make. And I think if the Repower for Europe is precisely what they try to make, I think they transforming the Fit for 55 program in the Fit for Self-Sufficiency. What is the Repower for Europe is how to encourage the we European will be less dependent of fossil fuels, how we European will be less dependent of imports of energy for already making the supply in Europe. And I think that is what they're making. The only point now is that we are in the middle of stormy times, and I think even they have already this clear view, and all these documents are this clear view, are already, in my opinion, too flexible in permitting each member state to take their own road making temporary measures. But I think they are clearly staying that one, that they would like to be more and more self-sufficient, so the level of renewables in the European power mix is already increasing heavily. The level of external dependency they try to diminish. There are already plans for closing the coal. So, and all those things are already there. I think they are working hard in this one. Unfortunately for them, is already in the middle of this crisis. They are forced to use the Article 122 of the European legislation, which allow the European government, and the European member states to take decision without passing through the European Parliament and to make already this in a hurry on this one. So I think that is going not to stand. It was applied probably the first time only during the period of the COVID, and now this 122 is as well being used for this energy, particular energy situation, but I'm sure that is ending. And I think that is going to be one, the things will become already more normal. They will use already the normal legislative procedures for making those one, with that gave already more certainty and more legal certainty for all the investment of everybody.
Next question is for Pepe and is related to the role of the hybrids in the funding strategy of Iberdrola and taking into account the current scenario.
Well, I think hopefully, the cost of issuing hybrids will come down because probably we are suffering from the volatility of the market right now. Nevertheless, as we have mentioned, we are assuming that we maintain the outstanding amount of hybrids. Our strategy there is to maintain the hybrids as a source of funding with an equity component, and obviously we are going to try to preserve that. No? So that is basically how we are looking to the situation right now.
Now is the time for Firmino, the question of Firmino, that is the last one.
Thank you so much. Actually, it's three stories, but first is, Galan, to thank you for the 20 years that you've been, in the company, but in particular for the 15 years that you've been chairman and CEO, and, wishing the best for Armando. What I've been a shareholder for Iberdrola for 20 years, And in the name, in my personal name, in the name of my shareholders, and if, including the Qataris, you know, I want to thank for the work that you've done. And I was just making some calculations, including dividend. You deliver over these 15 years a return of compound 8%, which is twice the market. So not many people can say that. And I do remember the time, you know, when you took over, Iberdrola was not even on the top five companies in Spain, and now is the second, and it's just 10 billion from the first. So, you know, and you are catching up quickly. But my question, probably three stories to ask three questions. I remember once many years ago, I went to your office, and you promised me, I'm going to send you a cartoon from Financial Times. You certainly remember, I mean, for the younger people that don't, it was a cartoon that the Financial Times, there was an aquarium, and there was like small and big fishes, and, you know, the big fishes were eating the small fishes, and each fish was a European utility. And in the end, and correct me if I'm wrong, there was just left EDF and E.ON, wasn't it? And all the fishes were going to be eaten. And you send me then by email, you see this one. So my first question is this. I mean, imagine and ask the guys from, you know, you just had an interview with Financial Times. If we're doing now an aquarium that was a world aquarium, right? And we had like a big fish called Nextera, and then, you know, a smaller one called Duke, and another one called Southern, and then Iberdrola, you know, the four largest utilities in Europe. What this aquarium will look like in 5 years' time? I mean, you know, if I ask you to draw the cartoon for the Financial Times this time, you know, how this aquarium would look like. I mean, my second story is also with a question is this. I mean, not many chairmen and CEOs can tell this story. I remember in 2007, I mean, for the younger people that are here, there was a hype on the market. And, the bankers, that some of them are here, convinced you to sell Iberdrola Renewables. At that time, actually, you know, I remember when you came to my office, you know, the pitch was seven euros. You end up, the bankers end up selling for 5.3. And at that time, there is a lot of analysts here. What was value was the future pipeline. So what you're going to build in 10 years' time. And, you know, then they would do a very nice DCF. I mean, and you did what I consider a class act. You know, the music was there at the time, and you served very well as Iberdrola shareholders. You sold it for 5.3, and then 5 years later, you bought it back for 3 euros because the music was a different one. And in this journey, you generated 2 billion of capital gains, you know, for our shareholders. So thank you so much for that. So my second question with the second story is this. What's next? I mean, when I look, you know, of your businesses where I can see that you can generate significant value, and what's missing, really, I mean, I'm very excited about the business that you have in Australia. I think that you can build there, you know, an amazing business, you know, and to what extent that would pass also to have, you know, a listing there in Australia that allow you to grow faster. Of course, I'm very concerned, I mean, or expected, you know, on the US, on Avangrid, that is finally, you know, we shareholders are going to see value. And also, you know, I'm pressing Mark, you know, certain things. When I saw Total, you know, certain having a great move in India and said, you know, where is Iberdrola? Why Iberdrola is not there? And I have, I mean, no doubts that you and Total will be, if we include, you know, the fishes, you know, outside, that will be the two European leaders in this journey. So my question to you, I mean, not me, but, you know, another guy in 10 years' time, you know, when it wants to tell the story, what will be the new Iberdrola Renewables that, you know, that you can cash for us, you know, 2 billion of capital gains? And the last story, I mean, I was very happy when you answered the first question, you know, dividends. And you remember this story. Once I went to your office in Madrid, and for those that haven't been there, he has nice paintings in the wall. And it was 2015, And on the end of the meeting, you kind of hint that, well, maybe the dividend. And I remember I turned it back and you were like, you know, saying, and I told, look, if you cut the dividend, I'm going to come back here and I take that painting off the wall. I mean, I worked for Fidelity at that time. My compliance department didn't allow me to come to your office to take the painting, but you did cut, you know, the dividend in 2016. But, you know, why I'm telling this story is that, I mean, and since then has been sacrosanct, and thank you so much. And I think a lot of these return comes from that discipline, is that, I mean, someone was suggesting scripts and all that kind of crap. No, keep the share count flat. And, you know, as your CFO or your great CFO was saying, if there is something that creates value, we are here to give you money like we did, you know, in 2006, you know, when you bought Scottish Power and even Energy East. So, you know, keep. But my question to you is that, is it possible, because my mother is 92, she's also a shareholder of Iberdrola, and she likes to keep, you know, your purchasing power, you know, to keep these growth at least with inflation and whatever inflation, and don't pay us more, you know, when you have a great year, but, you know, save for the worst years. And if you can keep that discipline, I'm sure that, you know, on that aquarium with the four, you know, you'll be one of the two left. So, again, thank you so much. I mean, in the everyone's name, including the Qataris, because they promise if Portugal goes to the World Cup final with Spain, we'll be there, the two of us. And only one will be happy, but the Qataris certainly, you know, they thank you also for these amazing returns.
Thank you, Firmino. It's very glad we know since so long time. I finished seeing the 2001 with joined the company as CEO of the company, and afterwards, as you mentioned, 2015, which I became chairman and CEO. How many things has already evolved in this period? But I think I would like to I mentioned to you before, I think you were the first one that 2015 or 2016 or 2014, around those years, when we were already the company in capitalization, then 19 or 20 worldwide, and 6 or 7 or whatever in Europe, and we were already in this pot already with another fishes. You predict that we are going to become the largest of Europe, and we are going to become one of the largest worldwide. I thank you very much for that one, but I was not convinced that that can already happen. But that's already happened. I think we are today the largest European company, almost 50% more than the next second one. We are one of the four largest worldwide. And the reason that one, a part of your convincement in that is like that, is because we have been very coherent with our strategy, very coherent with our delivery, and we never lie. And we have to say something, black is black, and we have to say, sorry, I'm wrong. We said we are wrong. But I think we've been very coherent. And I think that is what we are already trying to keep and maintain in our strategy, coherency. Now, it's easier now, as you mentioned before, let's present a wonderful plan. So we are presenting you a plan saying, no, we would like to be the first priority is financial solidity. And that means that we have potentially sacrificed on other things. Potentially another one can already run more than us on that one. Enron was doing that 22 years ago. It disappeared. Many of those who are in the pot has already in the different position because has not already had probably this already coherent and stable and predictable strategy across the time. So and that is what is our aim, is to be able to give already those investors that your mother, who you mentioned, and another one of that one, then we have our shareholders meeting in Bilbao, unfortunately now less with because of the pandemic, with 3,000, 4,000 people attending, with most of them already pensioners. So I would like them, they smile. So smiling those one is because we are doing something, because they are giving their money in our hands to provide them something for their lives. And I think that is our aim. I think to put in all our things this social part of our responsibility, including our shareholders as part of this social responsibility, because we talk social responsibility on many things. Shareholders have a social responsibility as well. So that's why who is going to, why we are, what is the, why we are not in India? I knew India very well. I know India since the 70s. I built two factories of batteries in India, in Gujarat, in the 70s. So I know India very well. I have very good friends in India. But I think at the end you have to look, again, alternatives. There are better places to put our money instead of India. So it looks, we see that in Australia is offering better things for us than India, or United States of Germany. So, and not saying that India is going not to offer opportunities, but I think we have to make a choice on that one. So on that point, I think, what is going to be if we make this spot in the future? Certainly we would like to be one of those, so no doubt. I don't know how many, but we would like to remain in this spot. So, and we are doing our best for making that happen, so that's clear. Okay, and thank you, Firmino, for your words. I think you are a good friend of the company. You've been always a good friend of myself as well. We have already an opportunity of sharing a good wine. I discovered a new Portuguese wine, which is a new grape, which is the, let me, notes here, is, I don't remember, which is in the north part of Portugal, in Ribeira da Pena, which we can already enjoy any time. So thank you. Any more questions?
No more questions, you can close.
So thank you very much. Event. Thank you very much for attending this meeting. I hope then the plan is already, we are convinced about the good positive things of this plan, and now I'm sure that those who have to deliver, they will deliver, as has already delivered the previous one. So thank you very much to all of you. Thank you.